Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in beautiful downtown Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us today. Andrew Callahan, 24-7 Sports in just a few minutes. And then we'll have Nathan Davis on in the final half hour to talk about Bucknell basketball. But first of all, our play-by-play call of the day, it's the double-double machine himself, Trae Young of Oklahoma.
Young to James, high to Odoms, spins away from Moretti, drives, got stripped on the way to the rim. Kadeem keeps it alive to Trae, step back, three, watch out, yes sir! T.Y. in nobody's eye, he was wide open, 68-59 OU.
My friend Toby Rowland from the Oklahoma Radio Network, I do Toby's show every year. Every year. You know, and what we'll do is we'll reciprocate. We'll get Toby on our show too, since Oklahoma's been so relevant nationally. But, yeah, I've known Toby for years. Great guy, excellent announcer. Great call there on Trae Young, the double-double machine. That is some basketball player right there. Whew, he's good. Wow. He's going to get a lot of consideration for National Player of the Year. A lot. We'll see how the next 2 months plays out. All right. Let's talk a little football, basketball. Bring in Andrew Callahan from 24/7 Sports. Always great to have you on, Andrew. Welcome back.
Yeah, of course. Good to talk to you, Steve.
I want to get to just a couple of quick Fiesta Bowl notes, and then we'll get to basketball. Sure. One item that you discussed in your extensive film study was the play of Steven Gonzalez at guard. What did the film tell you about how he played that game?
Well, I thought he was just the steadiest of all the linemen. I mean, he made so much of Vita Vea, right? The Washington defensive tackle, likely first-round pick, one of the best defensive tackles in the nation. And as that guard dealing with those tackles in the inside, Gonzalez, you know, as much of him as pretty much anybody else did outside of Connor McGovern. So he did a very good job against Vea. Pass protection, I didn't have him down for a single hurry. You know, everyone can always improve a little bit in the running game, but, you know, overall the run game was successful, and he traded back to the line, and certainly that includes Steven Gonzalez.
Anything else that jumped out to you on tape that really impressed you?
Well, you know, there's so much to choose from on either side of the ball, but, you know, I think Penn State had a really good plan for Jake Browning. You know, again, the other thing outside of A that we made such a big deal about was containing his scrambles, because really it was Austin Pettis and the months of guys who you would just describe as kind of average targets. So the key for Penn State was not allow those targets extra time to separate, which meant containing Browning. They backed off the blitz a little bit, played a lot more zone coverage. I mean, they're a pretty split down the middle team when it comes to man versus zone, but they got extra eyes on Browning because of that zone coverage. It obviously worked, and, you know, I think that spoke to a lot of the defensive discipline. The big long touchdowns that Washington really had, you could attribute to defensive breakdowns. So, you know, when they were playing solid, they obviously got the job done, and I think they were backed by a really good plan.
Right, let's take now let's go to the basketball part. You watched Northwestern on Friday night, but then you watched last night's game. A different lineup for obvious reasons. What were your impressions watching last night's game, and maybe in conjunction with what you saw Friday night?
Sure. You know, Friday night was the game that Penn State needed, not only just a bounce-back win at home, but a convincing one over a Northwestern team that's fallen off a lot since last year. But then again, you look at them going back on the road against Indiana last night, and to me, Steve, it just felt like straight out of last season. You know, you see this team that gets down early, it's close, but it's really just good enough to lose. Like, they're just good enough to come close but not finish the job, and you go, okay, well, Josh Freeze is out. Well, their problems with a short bench, which again produced just a single point, are not going away. So that's an issue. And Indiana, the other side, lost to Ron Davis, their best big, for the entirety of the season. So they're not at full strength, let alone at full strength the typical Indiana you would expect. So that's a game that had gone in as a coin flip. And if you're going in, you know, as the road team to a game that's an even spread, that means you're the better team. Penn State did not show that. This is a game that you kind of tough it out and say, listen, we had the year to grow last year with our freshmen. You know, Tony Carr finishes with 28 points, but, you know, most of those were down the stretch with free throws. And I thought it was just a performance that, you know, was really straight out of last season, where this year was supposed to be a difference, and we didn't see it on the road.
Shep Garner only had four shots in the game. It doesn't mean he was open. So, I mean, let's be fair about that. But do they need to somehow find him a couple more times in the offense?
I think so. I mean, you know, for me, and I'd have to go back and watch the games again, but it struck me that he's almost assumed the role Peyton Banks was holed into last year, right? You know, when they're going in transition, he's going straight to the corners, and I get that you want to have that to generate more high-percentage threes, which are found right there along the baseline. But the other part about that is his game is more diverse than simply the guy who's going to get the ball and shoot threes. Now, he might be proficient at that, more proficient at that than any other player on the floor outside of maybe Tony Carr. But still, I think when you limit his game's versatility, that limits the threat that he poses to different offenses. So I think you're right. They've got to get him more touches, which I think in turn will help his confidence. I mean, he's hitting big shots, you know, over the course of his career and even dating back to November to help close out games. You know, he's one of your better offensive weapons, and right now they're using him as a guy who's really got that one skill set as a three-point shooter.
Mike Watkins, was he affected by not having Josh Reeves out there last night?
I wouldn't say so much. I think he was more affected by the first half foul trouble. And, you know, he still finishes with a double-double, his third straight. And, again, he had that advantage inside against, you know, a team that was without its best big in Ron Davis. And, you know, you got to give credit to Freddie McSwain, who had a couple offensive boards there in the second half. But for me, Steve, when I went into this game, if you're Penn State, there were two big keys. It was shoot the three. They didn't shoot the three very well. They didn't take many attempts. And the other one was defensive rebounding, because Indiana is one of the best offensive rebounding teams in the country, and that just comes from a game mindset. So Watkins needed to play more than he did, and when he was out there, he needed to be more effective. Now, you say 12 boards in limited time, it's a pretty decent game. But still, 12 boards is what Indiana had on the offensive side. So I give them 10 extra shots, and I think part of that goes to Watkins has got to step up a little bit, and otherwise he had space and he had the matchups, but they still needed more out of him.
Yeah, because when you watch Reeves and Watkins out there, Reeves always seems to know where Watkins is. I wouldn't be surprised there's a higher percentage of assist to Watkins baskets from Reeves than maybe anybody else on the floor. That's why I asked the question.
Sure. Yeah, you know, not having Josh Reeves definitely hurt them last night. I think he brings a toughness that you see lacking on the road. You know, you get a call that doesn't go against your way. It seems to linger with this team more than they would like. And obviously it did last year with freshmen adjusting to the college game, but at some point you just kind of let that go. And that's where a junior like Reeves steps in and says, listen, we got to be on to the next play, where this bad play we have now is going to run to that series and then the next possession after that. And soon enough that we know it, we're down in a 6-0 hole. So they missed him, and I think that was definitely felt on both ends.
All right, moving forward, let's talk about the bench part. Now, obviously, there's a domino when you have to replace a starter with a bench player, so there's a domino. But what more do they need from their bench that can make a difference?
Well, right now, their best lineup outside of the starting five involves Jamari Wheeler replacing Shep Garner, and I think that's a strong point defensively. But offensively, you see him last night, and there's just not that total confidence in his shot yet. And that was something when I spoke to his high school coach soon after he committed, is something that's certainly still developing. But the bottom line is, if you only have, you know, four legitimate offensive threats on the floor, because, you know, Josh Reeves will get his points, but they're typically in those backdoor cuts, layups, off his field, then when you go to the bench and you're not getting any more of those offensive threats, or you only have two or three out there, I mean, you're really limited. So they need to get more offense from Wheeler, who, again, is a part of that best lineup outside of the starting five, and is your Bostic, who started instead of Wheeler last night. But a guy, again, who doesn't seem totally confident in his shot, which shrinks the floor and draws more attention to, like, the Lamar Stevens and Tony Carr.
Okay, they've got back-to-back home games coming up. Nebraska on Friday night. Nebraska's certainly playing better than I thought they would. And then Minnesota, which has run into personnel problems in a couple of different ways. What are how important is this segment of two games back-to-back for Penn State, in your opinion?
I mean, it's huge, because I think it set the tone for what they're going to be able to do in the rest of the schedule. And you could look at this and say, listen, they're 2-3 right now. Even if they go 1-1, they're 3-4, sub-500 hanging on the road. And I think it's quite clear that the Big Ten this season is going to be Michigan State, Purdue, and everybody else. And Penn State's fine staying within that pack, but they got to stay in the top half of that pack. And you can't do that at 3-4. So I think they got to win both, generate, you know, some positivity moving forward. Again, on the road is where they struggled primarily. But, you know, you're not going to push over Nebraska or Minnesota, teams who, you know, had success against Penn State last season. So I think it's huge, and the pressure only mounts, not only just for this team, but I think for that staff, because, again, the goal is to make the postseason. To me right now, barring a run that, you know, includes maybe two losses or three losses the rest of the way, they're not making the NCAA tournament. And that means they got to do their best to make the NIT. And, you know, that pressure will then trickle down from the staff to the guys.
Your thought, and have you taken any look at Nebraska or Minnesota at this point?
No, not at this point. That was the plan for tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, I think what you'll find is that the transfers, Palmer and Copeland, are better players than I thought they were going to be. I mean, I think that's what you're going to find. And then for Minnesota, not having Lynch back there takes away a shot blocking presence that changes the floor.
Yeah, it certainly does. And you touched upon the dynamic there with Minnesota, which, you know, God knows how he's been allowed to be on the team this season after more news comes out. You know, they still got that veteran backcourt. And Nebraska's got some new faces and, you know, like you mentioned, Copeland and Parker, who I think is their leading scorer, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, so those are guys that, regardless of, you know, past success, which the rest of the team has felt, you know, is going to have confidence coming in here. And teams, too, that are in similar Penn State positions. They're not Michigan State. That means they're not Purdue. Then they're fighting like everybody else to kind of get ahead of the pack.
What do you see in the Big Ten right now? Purdue last night had to survive, as a matter of fact. Purdue won by one at Michigan. But for the most part, they've had a terrific year. How do you view the Big Ten at this stage now that we have at least some sample size?
Yeah, again, I think I'd go back to those two teams. I mean, college basketball as a whole right now is kind of in flux. You go, okay, who's good? Because every number one is falling. I think we had three top five teams fall over the weekend. So, you know, the Big Ten only has those ranked two teams. You know, I think they're clearly the cream of the crop, and it's similar to last year. I thought widely it was expected maybe the Big Ten would take a step forward this year, but it just hasn't come to fruition. And especially a team like Minnesota losing Lynch, you know, that was a team that had risen up a little bit a year ago, and now you figure it would take an extra step. But, you know, that doesn't seem likely to happen at this stage. They're really kind of the two horse races at the top, which doesn't mean it can't be interesting down below, but it's going to take a team like a Penn State, perhaps a Minnesota, even without Lynch, to kind of step forward and say, hey, okay, we're behind Michigan State, Purdue. We're not that far behind, and we'd be happy to make a push to the tournament or make some noise in the Big Ten.
Right. Well, Andrew, it's always a pleasure. Appreciate the time very much, especially all the hard work and film study you put in. Everyone values it a lot.
Oh, thank you, Steve. I appreciate that, and looking forward to chatting with you next week.
In 103 years, there's been many firsts at Sunbury Motors Ford. But never one like this. SMC is selling vehicles for half price. You heard right. Sunbury Motors Ford is taking up to $15,007 off their remaining 2017 vehicles. That's a savings of up to 53%. SMC is serious about moving 67 2017 cars, SUVs, and trucks. They're slashing the price on 2017 F-150s up to $14,500. Take a whopping $8,000 off all remaining 2017 Ford Escapes. Take $7,000 off all remaining 2017 Ford Edges and Explorers. Lease a 2017 Ford C-Max Energy for only $179 a month for 24 months with zero down. That's zilch, nothing, nada. Hurry into Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, to be one of 67 lucky people to save 53% on your next new vehicle.
Well, 1 second, Gerrit Cole was traded. Next second, he wasn't. Now we don't know. Something will happen here, I'm sure, pretty soon, one way or the other. I mean, they're not playing right now. They're not even in spring training right now, so I think they have some time to work it out. Yeah. Ryan Shazier went back to practice today. Meanwhile, no Murray for the Patriots game. It's an uphill fight anyway for the Titans on Saturday night. They put that game in prime time, but DeMarco Murray is out. Derrick Henry will be the guy carrying most of the load in that game against the Patriots. But, look.
Hey, DeMarco Murray was his own worst critic going into the Chiefs game. Very impressive, the amount of yardage that he racked up at Arrowhead. But, yeah, can he do it back-to-back weeks?
Yeah, Derrick Henry, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So, once again, Ben Roethlisberger. Is he playing his final home game? He again has left open the possibility of retirement. He refused to commit to playing in 2017. Finally did come back. Asked about whether it's his last game at Heinz Field. He says, I don't think it is, but I'm not thinking about that right now. I'm going to play this one and give it everything I have. Yep. That's exactly the 2018 commitment all of the Steeler fans were hoping for. 4,251 yards and 28 touchdowns.
I just want him dialed into Sunday. I just want him dialed into hopefully three more games. Let's just get through three more games, and then we'll take it from there.
One of them's at New England, so you got two left.
Oh, listen to you.
Well, no, I'm not a Patriots fan.
I know you're not.
Okay? The Steelers' body of work in New England is not exactly what you call,
putrid. It's absolutely
overwhelming.
It's absolutely putrid. Absolutely.
Overwhelming?
It's overwhelmingly putrid.
It's not exactly overwhelming. I will say this. I don't think the Patriots are as good as last year. I don't.
I just wonder with all the stuff that ESPN laid out there last Friday about this strife going on in between closed doors. And I just wonder if that just means anything. I think in the grand scheme of things, I don't think it does. And maybe that'll galvanize them even more to stay even more sharped and focused to get another Super Bowl championship.
Look, do I think that Le'Veon Bell is better than Lewis? Yes. Do I think Antonio Brown is better than any receiver that the Patriots have? Yes. Is Brady better than Roethlisberger? Yeah, but not by a tremendous margin because Roethlisberger is a big-time major league quarterback. Is Gronk better than any tight end the Steelers could get? Well, unless they get the reincarnation of Mark Bavaro, the Steelers don't have any tight end that is in Gronk's category. And then defensively, this is where not having Shazier is going to really hurt. You just feel like with his athleticism, he's the kind of guy that could cover Gronk. But you know what the situation is, and because you know what the situation is, nothing you can do about it. You just hope Brian Shazier gets better. Just for life, not as just a football player.
But yeah, they were playing around with some different schematic defensive schemes during the Cleveland game just to give them a test run. Not that they would use that during the Patriots game, I wouldn't think.
Well, it's... we know it comes down to that. Can the Steelers go in there and can they somehow beat the Patriots? And look, the game they played against New England, they played really, really, really well in that game. There was a lot of emotion. It was a big game. Ryan Shazier showed up and was up in the box. I mean, there was a lot of things that they had. They know they can beat them.
Just do it.
The better games this weekend are in the NFC. I'm sorry, because I think the Patriots are going to maul Tennessee, and I think the Steelers are going to woodshed Jacksonville.
There have been some many a year where the wild card games were not really all that cracked up to be, and the divisional round games were terrific. So, yeah, if you're going to pick a dud from last weekend, it would have to be Buffalo and Jacksonville. But hopefully there'll be some. Hopefully the NFL will go 4-4 this weekend.
Look, Minnesota and the Saints has all the earmarks of being a great game.
I'm very curious to see how the Vikings are going to be if they're going to show up flat. It just seems like forever. It just seems like forever since we've even mentioned that the name of that team.
Yeah, but they're playing at home. And that's a big plus. And I think the Falcons Eagles game is going to be a great game. My problem with the Eagles is I just feel like in a great game, who's the better quarterback? Because I think the Eagles' offense has been great. Just the one game down the stretch that really bugged me. I could care less about Dallas. That was, I throw that game out completely. Completely. I don't like how they played at all against Oakland. I know they won the game, but I mean, there's a reason why John Gruden's now the head coach. Because Oakland underachieved this year.
I think people were just showing up at the link on Christmas night for one big party. And, yeah, I think, oh, yeah, this game has been way too tight for too long.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't like how the Eagles played that game. Because then you follow it up with a nothing game where you don't score at all. But it still was a nothing game. Now, for all we know, they may come out breathing fire. When's the Eagles game? Is that the first game on Saturday?
Yes, 4:35 over on Eagle 107.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Yep.
They may come out breathing fire. It's going to be, it'll be colder that day on Saturday than it's going to be. It's going to be warmer than Sunday.
You're right. They could be breathing fire just for the fact, Nick Foles with an extra few weeks of working with the ones.
Yeah. I think he is who he is, Sean. That's the problem. I think he is who he is. I think he's a good backup quarterback. But he is no longer a carry-the-load quarterback. I think Jay Ajayi has to have a big game for the Eagles. It's only going to be 28 degrees on Saturday there. 28 and falling during the game. That's an advantage for Philadelphia. But remember, the Falcons with Freeman, and now they got Tevin Coleman back. The Falcons can also run the football.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Very concerned, by the way, about the nerves that Drew Kelly could show on the show tomorrow. May have to calm him down. I don't know if he has any experience at this.
We'll have to see if, getting back on the bike attitude.
Yeah. You'll walk in there, dominate, own the show, return to radio.
Yeah.
All right. Although I talked to him at the holiday party.
It was great to see him there.
He seemed like one pretty happy guy.
He did. One word. Okay, two words. Better sleep.
Yeah. You look rested. Not only that, at this time of the year, I mean, he looked like he'd been out playing golf.
Yeah.
What are we doing here? Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Joined now by head basketball coach Nathan Davis of Bucknell. They got Lee coming into Soika tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Coach, welcome back. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you all as well.
We had heard that you'd seemed so much more relaxed of late, and the only thing that we could come up with is that you weren't doing the show.
How did you figure that out?
Too many texts from me.
We just kind of figured it out through the process of elimination. Like, what's missing in his life? Oh, wait a minute. All right, you have been able to win. You're off to a good 3-1 start in the league. And, you've got five out of the last six out of your last seven, including an overtime win. You learn something every time. So what did you learn watching your team play an overtime game and winning at Lafayette?
That we are pretty resilient. I thought that that defensively we improved tremendously. We were actually guarding them pretty well. We had a stretch where we lost a guy a couple of times, but we weren't very good offensively, to be honest with you. And we're putting ourselves in a hole with that. But we didn't get down. We kept playing just as hard. And actually, when the kid made a really tough shot to send to overtime, we got to the bench and not a balance. And the guys were going, this is all right. We get to play five more minutes of basketball. There's nothing wrong with that. So it was a good mental attitude, I thought.
You have to have the ability to make winning plays and avoid losing plays. Is that something you're seeing for your team now, more and more the ability to make the winning plays and staying away from losing plays?
I think so. I think that we've been playing good people, so we've been tested a lot. I think that if you look at our turnover rate, that's been good. Especially last game, the few games before that, we weren't as good. But I think for the most part, we've been making good plays. You're not going to win games without doing that, and I think for the most part, we have been.
You mentioned your ability to win that game in overtime, and the defense was a big reason why you did that. We know offensively how efficient you've been. How important was it to show them there a variety of ways to win?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a big thing, and it's really good teams and teams that go on to win championships. You got to win in multiple ways. There's gonna be days when the ball's not going in, so you got to be able to defend. There's gonna be days when the ball's not going in, so you got to get offensive rebounds. There's gonna be days when you're having trouble getting stops, you got to be able to get good shots and continue to score and take care of the ball. And so I think that with what we've been through, we've seen almost everything there is to see now. And so nothing should come as a surprise. We've won games, we've been down big, we've lost games, we've been up big, and everything in between. So we should know what it takes.
Do you feel like you are playing better overall defense the last couple of weeks?
There has been. I mean, actually, by our count, one of the things we obviously track is possessions and things like that. Is in the last three games, we've actually given up 0.88 points of possession, which is really good.
Really good.
Yeah, 0.9. Yeah. Another game, the game we lost was 0.9. Last game before that was 0.9. So we've done a good job with that. Honestly, the last couple of games, because we've been spending so much time practicing trying to get better defensively, we've taken a little bit of hit offensive and haven't been over a point of possession in any of those three games. So we've been trying to get back. I got to do a better job as a coach of finding the balance so that we keep improving in all areas.
Well, in fact, in your four conference games, your defensive efficiency adjusted is number one in the Patriot League. Your offensive efficiency is still number two, though.
Right, and I think that, I mean, certainly you've got to be 2 than 10, but I think that if right now you're sitting there and staring at the stats and going, this is great because we're here and as opposed to here, we can be better offensively and defensively, and we cannot be satisfied as a group until we become as good as we can be at both, and there's plenty of room for improvement in all those areas, and we got to keep working to get better to get where we want to go.
Have you found in conference games, Nathan, that you're able to dictate tempo a little bit, able to dictate tone more as opposed to maybe playing some of the other great teams that you played along the way, like North Carolina and so forth, where they try to impose their will on you?
I wish I could say yes. I'm not sure that the answer is yes yet. I think that at times we have. I thought that in the second half against American we did. I thought against Boston University in the game we lost, we did not at all. I thought against Army for the entire game we did. And then I thought on Monday night at Lafayette in the second half and overtime we did. But we got to do that all the time. And that's part of the process. You got to remember the other team's trying to win too. They've got good players. They've got good coaches. They're putting a plan together, but we've got to do a better job, I think, of doing the things we need to do well to continue to be the team that is kind of dictating the way the game is played.
How do you like your distribution? You're 49% twos, 30% threes, 21% at the line. Is that pretty good spread of distribution for you?
Yeah, I think that's fine. I think it's for us, it's going to be a lot of it's going to be more game to game because we have so many offensive weapons. And we're going to get a good one back tomorrow when Kimball McKenzie returns for the first time in 6 weeks. And it's as much about us making sure we get good shots, understanding that teams are going to take certain things away. We played, for instance, since we talked, we played LaSalle, and every time the ball went into Nana Fallon, you can hear Coach Gianni at the other end screaming, no threes, no threes, and so they're playing him one-on-one, he gets 30. You know?
Right, yeah.
And then we play Army, and it goes into him, and they're just collapsing around him. And so Bruce Moore gets 18 and hits four threes. And so I think a lot of it is understanding that people are going to play us different ways because we have a lot of options. And our thing is we've got to make sure that no matter who it is, we get a good shot every time and force people to pick their poison.
Right, and that's going to be really important moving forward. Talk about Kimball McKenzie coming back. Do you have to spot him minutes to get a feel for him, or do you just let him turn him loose like you did before?
Yeah, well, Kimball's very good, but even Steph Curry, when he came back, he wasn't ready to play 40 minutes the first night.
Right.
So we'll have a little bit of a minute restriction on him because he hasn't played, and there's no you just can't simulate that intensity, that conditioning. He's been doing for about 10 days. He's been doing a lot of the 5-on-0 stuff. He just started here really this week doing 5-on-5 with full contact and stuff like that. So he's going to be a little rusty. He's going to need to get back in shape, but he has a lot of intangibles he brings that's going to help us. So, yeah, to answer your question, we'll probably 16 to 20 tomorrow is what we'll be looking at, and then we'll see.
Not bad. Right. And just so fans know, the game is going to dictate. You know, he could say 16 to 20 now, but it may be 12, could be 22, somewhere. The game will dictate that.
Somewhat.
Yeah, exactly. 54.3% of twos. You're 47th in the nation in finishing around the rim, or at least in the paint. What are some of the factors, and what has Stephen Brown meant to allowing that kind of finishing inside?
Well, I think the first thing, in fact, you mentioned Stephen Brown, but you mentioned all the guys. We have good players, and Anonif Allen, and Zach Thomas, and Nate Sestine, and all those guys can finish around the basket. So for the most part, when we get in there, we're going to finish as long as we take good shots. I think that, yeah, that's good. I think it could be better because I think there's times that we force some shots over that are contested. And there around the rim that we need to kick out. But again, it comes back to having good players that are athletic and not afraid to get hit.
Do you like now? You're going to get Kimball McKenzie back, so you had a rotation. Do you feel pretty good about where the rotation is right now? Or is it still, again, a work in progress?
I think it's, to an extent, still a work in progress. I think it's coming back into focus a little bit more now. We'll get Kimball back tomorrow. Hopefully we'll get Avi Toomer back towards the end of next week, middle to end of next week. He'll be able to start playing. He actually practiced some today, 5-on-5, which was good to see him out there. But at the same time, the good thing is really, especially in the last couple of weeks, some guys have really stepped up their play. Ben Robertson has really done a lot to help us on the wing because he can affect the game without scoring. He gets rebounds. He gets out and runs. He's done a good job defensively. Bruce Moore's come on and go right down. And guys have stepped up. Our freshman Jimmy Sillis has been playing well. So we're in a good spot. We're in a good spot. I've still got to figure out the rotation and how we want to match up with people and what's our best lineups, both offensively and defensively, and some of that stuff. But I think we're certainly in a good place moving forward to hopefully find that rhythm.
Are you comfortable with the minutes that your primary players are playing, or do you want to back off, or you have the ability to give them more?
I would. It's hard because the game that's fresh in my mind is a 45-minute game, obviously,
right.
The other night.
Sure,
so
that's different.
Everyone's
we're
jacked up a little. Ideally, I would like the Nanas and Stevens and Zachs to be playing in that 28 to 32 minute range, which
right.
is about where they are. It was closer to 28. Again, I'd be okay with that just because, again, it's a long season. And with the way our schedule is, we're playing every 3 days right now. We're going back to class next week. We got several Monday, Wednesdays coming up. So I'd like to keep guys fresh and have that like 28, 30, 32 kind of range with 10 guys playing really around, at least 10 guys playing over 10 minutes a game, I think would be ideal. But again, sometimes the game dictates it and there's fouls and you just got to deal with it. The battle plan never survives first contact. It's one thing I always remember.
That's right. A quick thumbnail on Lehigh. What impresses you about them?
Well, I think they're different than a year ago without Tim Kempton inside to kind of really put pressure on you in the paint with post defense and things like that. They're different. What they do is they can really spread you out. They can put a lineup out with five guys that can shoot the three and shoot with range, and they can put guys on the floor that can really penetrate and create mismatches and force help. So a big thing for us on the defensive end is going to be getting back in transition, guarding the ball, and doing a good job on high ball screens so that we don't have to overhelp when we get back to our matchups. And if we're beat, we got to switch and make sure that we're on guys. And then offensively, it always comes down to they're going to play man-to-man. They're going to play some 2-3 zone. It's about us having, like you said, having balance. It doesn't mean we're going to get 20 shots in the lane, but it's got to go in. Nana's got to be involved. Nate's team has got to be involved. We got to get penetration and see what that leads to and just make sure we take good shots and take care of the ball.
How impressed are you by number one, Caron Ross?
He's a really good player. I'm glad he's a senior and we'll be out of here soon. Sooner than later. I mean, I don't like the fact that Nana, Zach, and Steven are seniors also, but on the positive side, a guy like Caron Ross is gone. He's already the all-time leading assist leader in the Patriot League history. It's pretty good for a mid-semester your senior year.
Yeah.
And without Kempton, he's looked to score more. He's been more aggressive as far as shooting the ball and looking to score more. And he's just a really, really good player.
Jack Ham and I always have this running joke in football, Nathan, that we'll kid on the air saying that we talked to some opposing player and said, you know, we think you're ready to go to the NFL.
No,
really, we see all the signs. You're ready.
Yeah.
Hey, Nathan, good luck tomorrow night. Soika, 7 o'clock with Lehigh. Always a pleasure. Happy New Year from us to you.
Thank you.
Head coach Nathan Davis of Bucknell. They're back home tomorrow night at Soika. Looking forward to that one. And then they got to play three games next week. They got to play Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday next week. And two of them are on the road. They go up to Hamilton to play Colgate. Then they got to pop down to Baltimore to play Loyola before they get Holy Cross at home.
Yeah, the Holy Cross game, that's a Saturday noon game. So great time to check that out if you're not able to get there during the week. Bucknell.edu/boxoffice. You can get your tickets there.
In fact, that's sandwiched because after Lehigh tomorrow night, they got four of the next five on the road. So that Holy Cross game is the one at noon. I'm going to assume the suit hasn't shown up at Maddie's for the
Mm-mm.
basketball.
No. No.
No.
Mm-mm.
Some really great networking opportunities there for anybody who's in digital media. Yeah,
speaking of that, the next one is Thursday, January the 25th.
Very nice.
At noon at Maddie's.
It's just seems like a great way to network and
get to
know a terrific guy. And
definitely
Coach
is.
Davis.
Mm-hmm.
Meet some players, be a part of the community, integrated, network.
You would think.
I've been on a network.
Okay.
I've had surgery. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, final segment for today. Reuben Frank's going to join us tomorrow from NBC Sports Philadelphia. We'll talk with Reuben about the Eagles coming up in their playoff game Saturday against Atlanta at the Link, in which the rarity is a number 6 seed on the road is the favorite over the number 1 seed. But it's an unusual situation with no Carson Wentz. So that is what is coming up. Looking forward to... I think it's going to be... Yeah, I know the two NFC games, I think, are going to be terrific. I think the two AFC games, if you're a Steeler fan, it's going to be terrific. So that part's fun. And as a neutral football fan, you're going to sit there and go, oh, great. New England and Tennessee. Oh, boy.
Well, we thought the same thing last year with Houston going up to New England, and they hung with them for almost 2.5 quarters, and then the Pats finally pulled away from that game.
Exactly what point did you feel like Brock Osweiler had things under control?
I never really thought he did.
Exactly. You never once... I mean, I'm watching the game like going, all right, this is fine. New England's killing that team. They didn't score.
Nah, that's the thing. Pats just kept stubbing their toes throughout the first half.
Yeah. But Houston did nothing. Played decent defensively. But that was about it. In the end, I believe New England killed them, if I'm correct.
Yes, they woke up.
Yes. I expect Tennessee to have a nice flight back to Nashville. All right. I expect Jacksonville to have a nice flight back to Florida. Okay, so now there's a Harbaugh story. But it's about John Harbaugh. Don Fisher and I were talking last night. He looked at me and says, what do you make of Michigan? I said, you know what's interesting about Michigan to me? So I told Don, I'll share this with the audience, is that for a guy who's always had a really great reputation with quarterbacks and is a former quarterback himself, why is it at Michigan he hasn't been able to recruit a true freshman quarterback and develop him? Jake Rudock transferred from Iowa to Michigan. He really almost single-handedly bailed out Harbaugh's first season at Michigan. He had an experienced guy who could play Harbaugh's style and did a heck of a job. And Rudock's not a pro quarterback, but he was a good college quarterback that fit what Jim Harbaugh wanted to do. But if he doesn't come in as a fifth-year graduate transfer, he's stuck. Then he's at Wilton Spade. He's at Brandon Peters. He had Morris for a little bit, who ended up transferring to Central Michigan. Now, the quarterback that they're looking, you know, he had a corn, obviously. He transferred from Houston. Now they get Shea Patterson transferring in from Mississippi. In his fourth year, where is the freshman quarterback that Harbaugh has taken under his wing and developed?
It may be overdue to get John U. Bacon on the line. Always loved your chats with John since he's in the true epicenter of Wolverine football. Just to kind of get a feel as to, you know, how many of the Wolverines faithful, A, are they getting impatient with Harbaugh, or B, what you just said about the quarterback play.
I mean, you know, JT Barrett, recruited and developed Ohio State. Haskins, recruited, developed Ohio State. Trace McSorley, recruited, developed Penn State. Tommy Stevens, recruited, developed Penn State. Sean Clifford, same thing. Brian Lewerke, recruited, developed at Michigan State. I mean, Alex Hornibrook, he may not be the greatest quarterback out there, but he's good. You know, recruited, developed by Wisconsin. Where's the Michigan guy? They've had great defense, but there has not been the quarterback that Jim Harbaugh went out, recruited, and then took under his wing and developed. And that's supposedly his area of expertise. That's the part about Michigan that is baffling. It's not the talent and so forth. I mean, there's, like I've mentioned several times, they're lacking in some areas. He's recruited some really good players. Rashawn Gary, obviously, is a terrific player as an example of a Harbaugh recruit. I think his running backs he's recruited are good. I think his tight ends are good. Receivers are getting better. They've been losing a lot of guys on defense. I mean, it's kind of taken away a little bit of their flexibility along the way, especially up front. Now, Gary's really good, but still. But what's interesting is Jason Lockenforo, who's been on this show before, is reporting that John Harbaugh is actually the one that is somewhat, quote, embattled. He's won a Super Bowl. Now, albeit it was against Jim, but he's won a Super Bowl. But I mean, that's that. When I look at Michigan, objectively, when I look at Michigan, that's the one area where I look at Jim Harbaugh and I say, that doesn't add up. Where you recruit a really good quarterback, you take him under your wing, you develop him, and that guy wins for you for 2-3 years. Where is that guy? That's been the odd part to me about his tenure in Ann Arbor.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.